You're listening to DraftKings Network.
On April 26th, Boy Kills World. The must-see action movie event of the year hits theaters.
Yes! The Vanderkoys killed my family. Now, I'm gonna kill them one by one.
Critics are calling it Looney Tunes on acid.
You know how hard it is to get a cereal company to sponsor mass murder?
Weapons. Danger. Let's do this.
Bill Skarsgård in Boy Kills World. Only in theaters April 26th. Rated R.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Beckley, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batar Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
Last time we did this, the expertise was obvious. We have said for a while now that sports business is not covered very well by the sports media, ill-equipped, but we've got two guys who have been in all the big rooms negotiating all the big deals with us. So our thanks to John Skipper and David Sampson for making the time again. We will talk about just the ever-changing landscape of college football off of last night's championship in a second. But the first thing I wanted to bring up to you guys, and let's start with you, John, is the idea of Apple buying ESPN or Apple competing with Disney. When you see reports or predictions that Apple will try and get into the live sports game, what are your thoughts when you see some of those reports? And thank you guys for making the time for us today.
Well, look, I would actually start from a bigger picture and narrow down. There have been discussions about whether Disney might spin off ESPN. I think the latest speculation, and it's probably only speculation, I do not think that the Walt Disney Company has any interest in selling itself. There was a speculation that Apple might find it advantageous to their Apple Plus, their content aspirations, to buy the Walt Disney Company. And that comes up only because it would take a company with a $3 trillion market cap to have a chance to buy the Walt Disney Company. And what that would do for them is it would supply them a lot of intellectual property for their Apple TV efforts. And as you just pointed out, Dan, so I'll work myself down then to ESPN and sports. Obviously, I think the Walt Disney market cap is in the sort of $150 to $200 million range. I didn't look lately, as I no longer hold any Walt Disney stock. It is of less interest to me. But the disparity between that and $3 trillion is big enough that Apple could swallow it, would solve a lot of their content problems on TV Plus, and would make them the world's predominant player in sports.
Well, I think you have to focus on one other thing, John, that what Apple needs to do, they look over their shoulders, and I think they go to bed at night, and I think they see Jeff Bezos, and they see Amazon, and they see Amazon thinking of starting a new network, a new sports network. They look at Amazon bidding and getting the NFL package, and they look and see the possibility of Troy Aikman and maybe Al Michaels going over to Amazon. And here's how that works when you're in the world of trillions. It becomes totally irrational, and a company like Disney could very well take advantage and benefit in a huge way. Number one, to the extent that ESPN is a drag on its earnings and has some deleterious impact on its stock price, and they could take advantage of a $3 trillion company who's willing to pay 170 cents on the dollar, it would be almost irresponsible not to do it. The reason why this is not a today issue is I'm not convinced Apple is positive or at least wants to admit that Amazon's going to be successful in both monetizing and really taking over the live sports landscape. But eventually, that kind of consolidation is going to happen, and it will get the attention on the Hill in Washington.
It will. And again, all of these technology companies, the only discussion so far has been about whether they will incrementalize themselves into a sports strategy. If you bought ESPN, you would be the leader immediately. So you wouldn't have to sort of get yourself into this over a 3 to 5 to 7 year plan, you would be the leader in sports.
Well, you say the leader, but some people would look at ESPN since you left and look at sort of what's happened with the talent as we're witnessing now, what's happened with ratings, what's happened with revenue, what happened with COVID. And all of a sudden, there may be no huge acute need right now to do that. Whereas I think when Amazon actually completes some of its transactions and launches its network, I think the more successful that is, the more incentive Apple will have to make a big step like that. I really think they're going to be the follower in this case, not the leader.
It is, however, a step that would make them the leader immediately.
But John, yeah, leapfrog only.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you guys about the way that, because you guys have both surprised me here with the idea that it wasn't just ESPN in play, that Disney for sale is not something I had considered for a moment in my lifetime. But you're talking about Disney being for sale, the idea of that?
No, I'm not talking about Disney being for sale. I'm talking about, you know, everybody who gets consolidated is not always for sale. And since way back in sort of the go-go 60s or 70s, I can't quite remember, but there was a moment in time which it became very popular to just to buy a company whether they wanted to be bought or not. With the disparity between a $3 trillion market cap and a $200 billion market cap, sometimes the $200 billion company ultimately has to make the decision that's right for their shareholders. And that could be, as David points out, the right decision. They're not for sale. They're not for sale right now.
And remember, Disney was able to have ESPN and after the acquisition, everything was fine. Everything's coming up roses. And then this pandemic happens. And what turns on the lights at Disney, and John, you can answer this for certain, but I don't believe ESPN was ever turning on the lights. They made the lights brighter. What they found during COVID is that the things that turn on the lights that are truly Disney related struggled so much because of COVID, the revenue they lost, that they need to play catch up. You catch up in a business two ways. You either increase revenues or decrease expenses. And what Disney has to do, like many companies right now, they have to do both. They have to get their revenues back up, but they're also looking to trim. And if you can get a buyer who is not necessarily as price sensitive as many buyers are, like in sports, when you're trying to sell your team and you have a team that has to be sold like the Clippers, you pray to God that a guy named Steve Ballmer will fall out of the sky like an angel onto the shoulders of the other NBA owners and pay a price that is based purely on ego and fantasy and then have it grow into reality. That's the type of acquisition that can be made only by a few, where there's no syndicates required, there's no vetting of owners required. There's a guy who takes his ATM card, takes out a couple B, and has a team. And that's what Apple could do when they acquire Disney.
Well, you're correct in the mathematical calculations. I want to be clear that we're just having fun speculating, but the COVID, the pandemic, did create this differential. Apple went from $2 trillion to $3 trillion. Disney has declined slightly in the year. So it's gone from being sort of a, you know, a 5X to a, or a, I guess a 10X to being a 30X. So that is why there becomes a speculation.
Well, imagine for a minute if someone sees the 30X and we're talking about a value of a company being 30 times, some say EBITDA, some industries say, oh, we're 10 times revenue if you want to buy us. But of course, when you're actually buying something and you are somewhat price conscious, you try to look at net income and see how much money and positive cash flow there is. But for a company like Apple, whether it's from COVID or not, really doesn't matter. As a consequentialist, John, you'd agree, it is what it is. Apple is where it is and it's never going back. Disney is where it is and will not catch Apple. In our lifetimes, it's not going to happen. And that's what makes it more palatable for someone like Disney to throw up the white handkerchief and say, you know what, we don't need any more leotards. We're tired of it. We're tired of getting made to look bad by people saying what they want to say about topics that they care about that we don't care about. Let's just get rid of it.
David, what do you think ESPN is worth? I'm going to give John a minute to think about whether he can or wants to answer that question, but I'd like to know what the differences are between what ESPN might have been worth 10 years ago and what ESPN is worth now. As I look at the 100 top television events of the last year, 94 of them are live sports events. There's an Oprah thing here and a pre-recorded thing there. I think college basketball makes the top 100 at number 98, but if you have live sports, you have the most watched things on television when it's more fractured television is than it's ever been.
I think the tweet you're referring to is when they did the top 100 live events of 2021, Dan. Is that the one that had the picture of all the footballs and once in a while there was a UK flag and a soccer ball and a college basketball? Is that what you're talking about?
Olympics and yes, mostly just footballs all over the place.
Let me just make sure. I'm almost positive this is right, David. That was the 100 highest rated program, television programs of the year, not live events. Now, it so happens that 94 of the 100 are live events. Usually the Academy Awards, which is live, gets in there as well. Sometimes a live election results gets in there as well. But it's live events, but it's all television, all shows. And by the way, of the 94, 75 are NFL games. So it's overwhelmingly the NFL.
Right. But when you're doing rights deals, I'm just curious if you're looking at that tweet and saying, oh, I get it. Now I'm paying more for NFL because we're 94 of the top 100 or 75 of the top 97. You're doing a different type of calculus than that tweet.
You are. And forget the ratings on it. The reason those events are in the top 100 is the only thing that aggregates a live concurrent audience anymore almost has to be live. It almost has to be sports. There's nothing else that many people care about.
And it's also it's counted differently. We're in a whole new world. Tweets like that drive me insane because I still have the ugly stepchild syndrome from being in baseball for 18 years, where we had such jealousy toward the NFL that we would be staring at them and hoping they'd make a misstep and trying to imitate them and make our draft more relevant and make our deadline more exciting, whatever it is, free agency. And what I always used to say about the NFL is that's great, but tell me when the New York Jets have 81 home games. Let's talk about that. Or let's bring baseball down to 17 games down from 162. We'll play once a week, and then let's start doing some comparisons. Let's play only on 3 days a week, Thursday, Sunday, and Monday, and then add Saturday at the end of the season. Oh, by the way, let's flex the games, thank you very much, if you don't mind, with the exciting possibility of a tie. That kind of stuff, Dan, I've got smoke coming out of my ears.
Yeah, it must make you crazy because,
You put it on your show, and people listen to you and then assume that the NFL is this thing to genuflect toward, and it's just not.
Well, I'll only disagree to the extent that I love them all, but if baseball had the same number of teams as the NFL and they played exactly on the same limited schedule as they did for 18 weeks, their ratings would not be as high as the NFL's, not even close.
If there were no gravity on Earth, then I may not be sitting in the chair. How can you say that, John? You're just saying that because you're so NFL-centric, just like everybody else. There's no way you know that.
No. I am very much basketball and world football-centric. And I just am to tell you, it is America's game now. They do many things brilliant in terms of the scarcity of the product, in terms of the way they schedule, but they have not hurt themselves. They used to just be on Sunday, two time periods. They went Monday, they went Thursday, they went Sunday night, they went Saturday night late in the season. They still do very well. It's the game that America rallies around. And they love people love baseball, they love basketball, they love soccer, they love hockey, but the NFL is America's game.
ESPN is the worldwide leader in sports, right? Is that what you coined it? Or did you inherit that?
Well, I inherited it, and I wouldn't say it when I was actually in the seat, but they're the worldwide leader of sports in the United States.
Thank you. That's ipsa loquitur. Okay. That's the end of that conversation.
Well, yes, but I have more questions for the both of you, neither of which answered.
Wait. Before you answer that question, Dan, let me give David a little tiny bit more trouble. There is one sport bigger than the NFL, which is in the, I believe that the last Super Bowl, 350 million people watched. I believe that the last World Cup final, something north of a billion people watched. So yeah, the worldwide leader in sports is actual football as opposed to tackle football.
Neither of you answered my question of what ESPN is worth, and I don't want the answer whatever somebody's willing to pay for it. I want to know, you guys talked a lot without either one of you coming close to answering my question. What is ESPN worth?
I'll start. Where do we stand with your payout? Because that's going into my calculation. Are you and ESPN clear now?
Yes, we are. We are clear. They are cleared of the expense of our dead weight. Yes.
Okay, hold on. Then I got to get the abacus back out. Hold on 1 second. They're clear.
What is it worth? What was it worth 10 years ago, John? Can you answer these questions? Are you allowed?
You really can't answer the question because there's no intrinsic value unless you're a purely financial buyer. The question is, what is it worth to Apple? Does it help them get to $4 trillion? Then it's worth a trillion. But it's certainly, yes, I cannot imagine ESPN being sold for less than $100 billion.
Now, you say that, and you may be right, but Dan, your question, it's like asking how we know when it's going to be a quarter moon. And the answer is we can give you the math of that, but you're not taking into account that in a vacuum, as John was saying, there is a way to assign value. But ESPN, like many assets, has a premium to it that is not measured by normal financial metrics. So you have to look at what Apple gets. Why does Amazon want to have a network? Why do they want the NFL rights? Amazon makes its money because I'm on there every day going to the doorbell and getting a package. The more people they get on Amazon buying their products, that's where they're making real cash on cash, where the margins are the highest. And so anyone that's in the Amazon world, however you get there, if you're a, they want you to be Prime members. That's their goal. Apple TV wants you to use Apple products. They want to have you watch an Apple TV with an Apple iPhone, listening to Apple music while storing all your stuff in this Apple partly cloudy with the chance of meatballs. So to do that, they're going to make acquisitions that will make the consumer have to engage with fewer levels of authentication, fewer passwords, fewer usernames, because ease of use for a consumer is what they crave. And the more you own, the easier it is.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail ponds lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail ponds. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail ponds quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
Don Levitard.
Oh, I think Larry Fitzgerald's on the green right there.
Stugatz.
That's Alfonso Ribeiro.
Now, how do you think that Larry Fitzgerald
and the son.
Oh, the son.
To be fair.
All right, whatever.
Alfonso Ribeiro has a great ass.
This is the Don Levitard Show with the Stugatz.
Let's segue into what it is that was birthed here, at least in part by John Skipper, which is the money factory that is college football. We were having the argument last week whether college football was the second biggest sport in America. I don't know if you guys have an opinion on this. We were talking about baseball being fourth, and I was arguing. I'm like, well, wait a minute, though. Baseball, the Dodgers just signed like an $8 billion contract for the tonnage of a 162-game season. How do we do the measurements on what America's second biggest sport is according to television, according to TV dollars, according to prosperity and interest? What would be your argument? argument, David. Where would you put college football next to Major League Baseball?
I'd ask you to first narrow the definition. If you don't want to, then I will. Because what I do when you ask me what is baseball worth, it's I'm adding up the value of all 30 franchises. And in NFL, I'm doing the same thing. In basketball, I'm doing the same thing. In ML, Major League Soccer, EPL. And whatever entity is worth the most has the assets that are worth the most. MLB has assets, not just 30 teams. They've got MLB Network, MLB.com, which is a huge, huge value. That, John, were you involved in the Disney deal with MLB.com?
Yes.
So you were interested in what they do, because most people don't realize that MLB.com does much more than host 30 websites for its teams. As a matter of fact, that's what they do to lose money. They are a back office supplier, is an easy way to talk to the audience and to me when described and shown the financials for MLB.com. Their revenue's in the hundreds and hundreds of millions of dollars because people hire them to do their work.
If I, Dan, tried to answer your question as to what the ranking is, I have to confess my ranking was always skewed not towards trying to decide what is America's most popular sport. It is what sports are most valuable to ESPN. And we had kind of a hierarchy of NFL, college football, NBA, and baseball. Right. And it had a lot to do with volume. Right. I intrinsically, college football is not more or less valuable than the NBA. But in college football, we were doing 1500 games. Right. So it's volume plus ratings plus how important it is to the distributors to keep the subscribers plus advertising. And so that was sort of our hierarchy. So that may not be what the rank of order is for American fans, and they make, I know that MLB would have a righteous case if they said to me, we've done surveys and we rank second among fans in terms of the popularity of the sport. When I talk about the power of the sport, it really, it's ESPN centric. So I may have been misleading in the past.
Do you know that I used to have nightmares about you, John, because before we were able to do shows like this with Dan, I always imagined I was the and that's exactly what baseball is and what they're aware they are. And it is, I'm triggered to a point where I'm actually schwitzing at the moment.
He did do before he got to baseball. He was trying to remember, like you remember like that old high school guy who you didn't know that well, baseball is fourth.
It's true.
The guy in the Traveling Wilburys, right? Roy Orbison and George Harrison and
Tom Petty.
And the guy from
ELO. One more. There's one more that's Jeff Lynn. By the way, Jeff Lynn. So baseball's Jeff Lynn. There's nothing wrong with that. EO is a solid track record. Jeff Lynn, great producer, great singer.
John, tell people, explain to people what a spectacular business college football was for ESPN. That's why you speak of it that way.
Well, if you put it in a particular place in time, I became in charge of programming in 2005. So college football still had a lot of unexplored territory, right? There were lots and lots and lots of games that weren't on television. So ESPN was most poised to take advantage of that. So it was very valuable to us. More NFL would have been valuable to us, but it wasn't available. They were selling it all. There were lots of ACC games, lots of Big Ten games, lots of SEC, Pac-12, Pac-10 games, or Big Ten games that weren't sold. So college football was crazy valuable to us. And it was undervalued by the broadcast networks because they did not have the shelf space to put it on. So we could get it all, and getting it all triggered everybody else being interested in it, and the price is going up. So ESPN was more important in the finances and what's happening now in college football than it was in the NFL, because for a while, ESPN was pretty much the only game in town.
John, you had an obligation to the distributors that you had to deliver certain amounts of programming. You started all these channels, and I'm using capital Y, not necessarily you, but you can help me with this. Starts with ESPN, then you've got ESPN The Deuce, then you've got ESPN Classic, ESPN U, and you're doing that for the sole reason you've got a program 24 hours without showing curling, and you're doing that in order to increase the amount of money that you are getting per subscriber. So you had to go to the store that gave you the most bang for your buck. And college football was the most underserved at the time. But if it had been another sport that could have delivered to you the same subscription base, the same rate, and the same hours of programming on all of your different channels, do you not agree that you would have gone and done a deal with them?
Sure, and we did. I mean, we did deals with everybody, right? College basketball isn't underrated. If you were talking, if you continued that list into 5, 6, and 7, college basketball is in there. And ESPN was doing an enormous number of games. And I misspoke before. We were doing about 400 college football games. We were doing 1,500 college basketball games.
Because you had 24 hours, 7 days a week, you had a program.
Well, remember, you cannot warehouse games. So if I was the only buyer, if I went to the ACC and said, I want to buy all of your basketball games, all of your football games, nobody else could buy those because they couldn't air them anywhere. We created ESPN 3, by the way, the sleeper channel of all time, because ESPN 3 was a broadband network and we could buy infinite number of games. And nobody ever copied that. That actually was the first sports streaming channel. And that was why we could buy all those games.
I love when he brings up ESPN 3, but leaves out ESPN The Phone. I enjoy that was just a little side project for Mr. Skipper, ESPN 3. Can you explain to the audience, John, why ESPN, and I think you, had to pay $1.2 billion for Monday Night Football?
I didn't pay. Why we had to pay $1.2 billion?
Yeah, because NBC got the NFL package for $700 million. ESPN had to pay a good deal more to get into the football game.
I think the greatest disparity between ESPN and the other NFL buyers was when we did the deal before last, where ESPN paid close to $2 billion. Everybody else paid $1 billion. And ultimately, the answer is because it was worth more to us because we were getting more distributor fees. The NFL understood that. The NFL had leverage because they had other buyers, right? If we're buying all of the college football conferences games, they have no other buyer to buy everything. They can split it up, sell it to a bunch of people, but the NFL had other buyers, so it was worth it to us. That's the only reason.
Do you look back on that and say to yourself how thankful you are that you're not dealing with the digital streaming wars as they exist now? You're not dealing with Amazon as a competitor to buy that content, because while you may have swallowed hard and paid 2-to-1 for that property, I think that it becomes harder to explain when it's 3-to-1 or 4-to-1 or 5-to-1, which may at the end of the day where these numbers get to, which is why, as you know, with MetaLark and what we're doing here, content is really the place to be.
Yeah, I don't think it'll get where ESPN has to pay that much more. I have to give credit to my successors, and I didn't really mean, it may have been a Freudian slip that I accented the first syllable on that, but I have to give credit to my successors that they actually didn't pay 2X this time, right? They paid 2.7, I think, and everybody else had to pay 1.5, 1.6, 1.7 because the differential didn't go up because the source of ESPN's money has not increased enough for the ESPN to have, for the NFL to have that leverage.
Can you guys explain to me, before we get on to other matters that I wanted to talk to you about, just why it is that leagues want to be in bowl games, why there are so many bowl games, why Rutgers needs to play in a bowl game? Like, what is happening there?
This is another ranking thing, right? We can rank the reasons why colleges go to bowls. And if I ask the average fan or almost anybody in the business, rank the reasons that people do it, they would start with, well, it must be money. This is among the very few times in sports where people actually do things and money is not the first reason or the second reason or the third reason or the fourth reason that any school goes to a bowl. They go to provide an experience for their fans, and their fans get to go to New Orleans and that makes them happy, and they give more money to the school. It's an experience for their players that they used to be excited about. We can segue into why the players aren't excited about it now, but the players used to be excited about it. Three, and this is a sleeper one that almost nobody ever gets. If you play in a bowl, you are allowed by the NCAA or your conference to continue practicing for a whole nother 4 or 5 or 6 weeks. That is great. If you're the coach, you get to practice with most of the players who are going to be returning the next year. You get an advantage over the teams that don't go. You can finish with a win is an answer. When you get down to it, finances have almost nothing to do. Rutgers stepped into Texas A&M slot in the Gator Bowl. It had nothing to do with money. In fact, I would bet you that they broke even at best. They might well have lost money, which, by the way, is a great Rutgers tradition, which is they have traditionally been the school with the greatest athletic department deficit among all Power Five teams. And I suspect that this slightly increased it and slightly instead of slightly decreased it. But Greg Schiano's trying to build something there. So he goes to a bowl, makes his team seem more successful, more important. His fans get to watch another game. His players get to practice again. And by the way, it does coincide with the first national signing day as well. And it is better to have your team in a bowl than not in a bowl when you're trying to recruit new players.
Samson, you were shaking.
You look like you don't believe.
Samson,
you believe almost none of that.
You were shaking your head no the entire time he was talking.
Only because I expected it to be at least 90 to 120 seconds shorter, because the minute he started with money's not one, it's not two, it's not three, it's not four. And then he goes on to say exactly why money's one. So let me just try to translate what John just said in a way that maybe we can all understand better. Everything you just said about Rutgers is wrong. So we can do a Mortimer bet for a dollar. Greg Schiano had nothing to do with it. It had nothing to do with practice for another month. It had nothing to do with recruiting at all. It was all about money, and it was all about opportunity. It was all about boosters. It was all about getting more money so more money can go out the door to players, because it's not recruiting anymore, as Nick Saban so sadly said when he was despondent about NILs, saying that we never had the intention that kids would choose school according to how much they got paid. It made me laugh. Of course that was the intention, and that is the result. So to the extent that your team is in a bowl game and that increases your Q rating, high school free agents couldn't give a flying rat's tuchus about
that. Wow, okay.
They want to know right now, what am I getting? I'm a second string offensive lineman. Can I get a 40 grand sponsorship with Bob's Garage? The big time schools, the big time high school free agents are going to the highest bidder. When you've got all these bowl games, you like all the bowl games because you get the programming. The universities do not say, nor does the coach say, man, we get another month of practice. This is going to be so great for recruiting. It makes everyone feel good when we go to bowl games. It's horse hockey, John, and you know it. You're saying it because it makes you feel better about all the money you spend on all the bowls that no one actually cares about.
Well, in fact, fans do care about bowls. We were doing, I think, 35 out of 38 bowls at ESPN when I was there, and we did good ratings. They drive money. And they drive distribution. People love bowls.
Does that mean money matters, John?
The Akron Zip Zone against the Dayton Flyers in a bowl, and a million people will watch. A million people will watch, which I hate to rub it in, David, but it's more people than watch most regular season baseball games.
Oh, that hurts me. I'm so hurt right now with that statistic that every single person under the sun knows when we're trying to add value to these listeners.
Well,
that really was great.
But one of the things he's bringing up here, and I do want to talk about this as well, because people are seeing a climate shift when it comes to content creation. And everyone knows what McAfee did with FanDuel and what we've done here, if you're listening to this, with DraftKings. But those games do those kind of viewership numbers, at least in part because of fandom, but also because of gambling, correct? And now everything has tumbled. The walls have tumbled on gambling. We'll get to Skipper in a second here. But Samson, we talked to Jason Robbins yesterday, the CEO of DraftKings, and I was just talking about how seismic it was to have the leagues no longer turn gambling into a shame. The leagues come out and say, well, we've got some new oil wells over here. Never mind all that, rosary bead clutching that we did with Pete Rose and gambling and Tim Donaghy. Gambling is here. It's a part of sports. Sports have endorsed gambling. Are you? And Robbins told us that baseball was the leader here, that baseball was interested in the gambling money first, in the fantasy aspects of some of this and legitimizing some of this. So were you surprised that the sport of Pete Rose said, you know what? Here, come on, gambling. We'll make DraftKings matter. We'll go ahead and use your sponsorship. We'll legitimize you. We'll put you on our product.
Pete Rose became the face of gambling because Paul Giamatti's father dropped dead and Bud Selig genuflected in Bart Giamatti's general direction. So I think that Pete Rose being the face, I think we need to explain to people why Pete Rose is still banned from baseball, because Bud Selig was never going to reverse, ever, was going to reverse what Bart Giamatti had imposed on Pete Rose before Bart Giamatti died. Then when Rob took over for Bud, he was not going to be the one, while Bud was alive, and he's still alive, to go against Bud, because Bud's final wish, above all, shockingly, is don't let Pete Rose back. Whatever you do, and I had a solution for Pete Rose that I gave to Rob before he was elected, saying that you should keep him suspended but make him Hall of Fame eligible. Let the writers decide if he's going to be a Hall of Famer, because then we could kill two birds with one stone and not muddle up the Hall of Fame issue with the fact that we can't reinstate Pete Rose because of Bart Giamatti. But in terms of gambling, why baseball was so willing to embrace it, two reasons. One, the fewest number of dollars are bet on baseball versus the other sports. So the possibility of any sort of competitive integrity or player involvement is far smaller in our minds in baseball than it would be in basketball with point shaving or in football. And two, there is such a need by owners and a desire to have access to a stream of revenue that was dangling in front of us in the beginning in the form of Indian casinos. Is how it first started. We weren't allowed to do deals with them. Then you were allowed to do it, but they couldn't be prime signage in your ballpark. So it eventually got torn away and torn away when baseball realized the amount of revenue that was left on the table. There's no difference between gambling and uniform ads and helmet ads and all the different ways that these sports teams are looking to increase revenue. As far as DraftKings and why they are doing what they're doing, whether it's with MetalArk or with anyone else, you are the key to them. The reason why you're worth $50 million at a minimum, other than your pretty face, is that you've got a huge loyal audience. And when you say jump, your audience says how high. When you associate with DraftKings and they've got a choice when they open their Twitter and it's FanDuel and it's DraftKings and it's Caesars or MGM or everything else, people want to be loyal to what you're loyal to. And that has a value to a company. And the number is way higher than 50. Not that you did a bad job, but next time you're going to get way more.
He's criticizing.
We're going to have you negotiate the next deal.
Criticizing how you negotiated this deal.
It's okay, man. He got me back for that ratings thing by telling me I was dead wrong on Greg Schiano and all of the Rutgers stuff. Oh my gosh. We'll move on from that. No,
he's,
okay.
But he's right about us getting a bad deal and being undervalued. I saw what McAfee got.
All right. You guys, first of all, we should be very transparent that as we're discussing this, we are in business with DraftKings. They're the sponsor of the show. So I don't want to have any feeling. I know you talked to Jason. Just to talk about the appeal of it. So sports betting, mobile betting in New York launched last weekend, and 5.8 million bets were placed in the first 12 hours. If anybody has any question about why the leagues have gotten themselves around to embracing this, there's your answer. In the state of New York, close to 6 million people, that would be 500,000 people. That's more people than got Omicron in those 12 hours. So there's your answer as to why leagues are embracing it. There's money in it. And there's your answer as to why there's all of this competition in betting. And of course, Dan, it's coming big to your state, right? There's a big discussion now about how people are going to be able to place bets in Florida. And we believe that as sports fans, they should have as many opportunities to bet as many places as they can. New York launched with five companies. We believe that the citizens of Florida should have the right to place bets to as many people as possible.
Speaking to what it is that John is talking about there, just so that the audience understands, because this is not an infomercial, and we aspire to be and often represent as a journalistic entity. But John is telling you, and I am telling you, that it is good for our business if FloridaEducationChampions.com is someplace that you go because you believe that legalized sports betting is something that should be in Florida. If you don't believe that, you are fine to not believe it. But we are in business with people who are making a bet, them and us, that this is going to be something that catches on the same way it has all over Europe, the same way that the walls have fallen all over sports. I can't believe, David, maybe I'm naive, I can't believe that it happened this fast. And it was absolutely the leagues putting down their morality and seeing the dollars, seeing new oil wells that made this happen, because this is already something that has been popular for a while in Europe. America has been more repressed about this stuff.
You say that no decisions are made because of money, and I say it's the opposite. Every decision is made because of money. And if you can hide behind your decreases in revenue, then it makes it much easier to swallow. You're saying they found oil wells, and I disagree, because I want to make sure we explain the difference. When you are drilling for oil wells, you don't know necessarily. You buy a bunch of land, you say, hey, that guy has it, let's drill, maybe there will be oil here. And if there's not, then we'll go drill somewhere else. The gambling money oil has always been in the same place, available to anyone who wants to come with a drill. And baseball had chosen purposefully not to bring its equipment onto that field, and all sports had followed suit, and together they had colluded to do that, and then they just couldn't take it any longer because they needed that money. So it's not like they took a chance by getting into bed with gambling. It always had been there. It's not like all of a sudden there's more people gambling because it is legal. It is more people gambling in a different way because it is much easier, where you don't have to find a dime, go to the corner phone booth, put a dime in when your wife's not looking, and carry around a piece of paper, and then meet a guy at the parking lot of Publix to give him $250 every Tuesday. Think about it. Everything is done connected to your bank on your phone, all kosher, no salami, no pork, and plenty of money.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Don Lebatard.
He said while you were off there, while the connection was bad, he had mentioned that you have lost a lot of weight and that he admires that. What got into you? Why did you decide? I thought it was all, I thought we enjoyed being about the munchies.
Yeah.
Oh, it's slurring again. Okay, the connection is bad again, unfortunately.
Back to Magnus.
Okay, back to Magnus for Magnus. And this is going about as well as it could go. Thank you, Billy, again for laughing in my face.
Stugatz.
Magnus. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Hello?
Yes, sir, Action.
Hello?
Action.
Man, I'm really sorry. This is literally the worst way to ever do this. This is burning my heart that this is happening. But if you could hear me, just understand, I'm sorry.
This is the Don Lebatar Show with the Stugatz.
David, tell me if this was your experience, because I felt that under John's watch at ESPN, what ended up happening was that baseball became less relevant at ESPN. I've always thought this about hockey, that ESPN covered the hell out of hockey when they had hockey, then they covered it less, and it hurt hockey that ESPN wasn't covering it. It felt to me like ESPN had something to do with baseball losing some of its popularity because baseball was being covered less well by ESPN than it used to be. Back when we were all watching Baseball Tonight together and it was the only option before MLB Network or before any of those other things.
So we would sit around in the commissioner's office actually and in league meetings and we would watch SportsCenter. I don't know if you know this, John, and we would watch on a particular day and we would calculate how many minutes into a program would the first baseball highlight be? How many seconds per game? How many games covered? How much chatter after the box score? Do you go right to commercial? Do you tease it? We were keeping track of all this because we, again, had the inferiority complex that you had no interest in supporting, again, Capital Y, in supporting baseball while we were providing what we thought was all of this live programming for what we also thought was too little in rights fees. And so you had an amazing power over everyone in baseball. And what always struck me about it is that inferiority complex that we discussed that was NFL based. We always thought that you were the driver of the popularity because we believe that if you would promote baseball better, that that would mean people would engage with baseball more and in a better, more meaningful way that would increase the value of our franchises. So what struck us is that you had made a choice to get into bed with the NFL in a far greater way with baseball because we were never going to believe that NFL was more valuable to you. So we always just assumed that you chose them over us because of some sort of relationship you may have had with a commissioner that was better than the one you had with ours.
It's not accurate. I'm aware that you kept the statistics because Bud Selig would call me and tell me the numbers and want to know why we had chosen that. Here is a fact which many people will be skeptical of. The programming department did not interfere with what went on SportsCenter. Nobody was ever told we're covering less hockey because we don't have the hockey games. Hockey continued to appear. It appeared slightly less because the promos disappeared because we didn't have games. It may have been a little bit less top of mind, but the people who did SportsCenter made the decisions about what ended up in the highlights, and no executive ever told them. By the way, I only told them one time, and that was I told them, and they ignored me over and over. I told them I want to see more women's sports in the highlights, and we consistently would get it back that it would be 3%, and maybe when I told them to do it, went to 3.5%. Baseball got plenty of its fair share of coverage. Hockey got plenty of its fair share of coverage. And I believe ESPN reflects what people think more than it forces them to change their mind.
You're talking like a publisher saying, oh, I have nothing to do with what goes on. You're going to have to speak to my managing editor. Well, it's CBS. Here's a little inside CBS what happens. All of a sudden, CBS does a deal with Serie A, and before you know it, CBS Sports HQ has Serie A highlights. Oh, because that's exactly what the producers were going to do when they woke up in the morning, was to put Serie A highlights into the show. Then they get a call, and it's not from the head of CBS. It's not from the publisher, John Skipper. It's from people 17 levels below who walk in to the production meeting and say, by the way, guess what? Our mom and dad just did a huge deal with this entity. We will now be doing a pregame, postgame, and highlights during our SportsCenter. And you're saying that never happened.
It never happened that we decided not to cover hockey as much. It did not happen. I did not call people and tell them to. And by the way, ESPN is the only sports media company for whom they're in a news division as well. The news people did not influence what rights we bought, and the right people who bought rights did not influence what the news covered. I think CBS would have to plead guilty to that. And the worst offenders were Fox. Right? You saw, and by the way, they now do violate this at ESPN. I would not have done it, but you go onto ESPN.com now and the UFC is all over it because they're promoting the fight so that they get pay-per-views. We did not do that. We showed UFC highlights despite not having it. We showed hockey highlights despite not having it. And you're right. And by the way, everybody thought what you think. Everybody would call me and say, you don't cover us enough. So it can't both be right.
UFC would never have been there if you had still been the president?
While I was there, Dana White misunderstands this. He always says, John Skipper doesn't understand how valuable we are, how popular we are. It had nothing to do with that. It had to do with whether I could justify paying the rights fee and I was going to make up that money in either advertising or distribution fees. We couldn't get more distribution fees, and advertisers at the time were not particularly enamored of UFC. So we did cover it because we knew it was popular. I personally was not a fan of the sport itself. You know, I'm not really really thrilled about any sport that starts with a cage. And so it wasn't thrilling to me. No.
So it would have never been
before.
If it was a good business decision, I would have acquired the rights. Well, it
ended up being a good business decision for them during the pandemic, right? It ended up, UFC ended up getting more and more power. And I was alarmed at how quickly that happened, where it went from John Skipper's ESPN didn't do deals with UFC to now UFC is calling some shots behind the scenes there on editorial content.
Well, the contrast is right, but I would have done a deal with the UFC. If they'd have sold it to me for a dollar, I would have bought it. If I would have paid $1 billion, they would have sold it to me. So it wasn't a question of wanting to do a deal or not. There was not a financially sensible deal I could do the UFC. And yeah, along the margins, if you like one sport better than the other, did I like the MLS because I like football? Was I more inclined? But we also did a financially feasible deal. But yeah, along the margins, it does make a little difference. But I did not do a deal because I didn't like the sport.
But John, you'd have to admit that you did not work as hard as you could have to make a deal happen because, as you just said, I personally don't like sports that start in a cage.
That were played on a cage. I prefer a pitch or an arena or a field to a cage. And by the way, I want to agree with Dan to be generous that ESPN did a very good deal with the UFC, but it was because they could use it to drive subscribers to ESPN Plus. It doesn't do much for ESPN.
Gentlemen, thank you for being on with us. I was negligent in not asking you, John, what is the closest ESPN was to being sold while you were there? Can the story be told now?
Never. It was never close to being sold.
Because it was too profitable.
It was never contemplated. As far as I knew, if somebody was contemplating it, they never informed me. And in fact, when I asked whether it was contemplated, I was always told no. I believe that was honest.
If you guys had to make a prediction, both of you, you believe ESPN will be sold in the next 3 or 4 years?
I'll take over 4, but I'll take under 8.
That's a pretty good guess, probably. Though I would tend to believe that as of right now, it is less likely to happen than to happen.
Because? Any particular reason? Any expertise?
Because it's still quite valuable to the Walt Disney Company. I think it is more likely, slightly, that the Walt Disney Company would be sold than ESPN would be sold out of the Walt Disney Company.
Wow. All right. Good talking to you guys.
I'll take the other side of
that. It's a lot of information. Thank you, gentlemen. People appreciate your expertise here.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Mike, and I know you were hoping for an update on those fishtail ponds in my backyard. Well, have I got news for you. I actually got lighting installed, and I can change it with an app. Beautiful fishtail palms lit up red, depending on my mood. If my hockey team wins, we light those suckers red. Anyways, I like being outside. I like looking at those fishtail palms. You love hearing about it. But what's in my hand other than my app changing the lighting? A Miller Lite is in my hand. That's right, because I know when a Miller Lite is in my hand, I make a good time, Miller time. I take that first sip, I know immediately I made the right call. Nothing goes with my fishtail palms quite like a Miller Lite. It makes everything so much better. And I'm going to have some people over. I'm going to toss them that beautiful white can. They're going to say, heck yeah. And they're going to have that first sip and know, just like me, that they made the right call. Times change, but you can always enjoy the great taste of Miller Lite. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan. Or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile. And the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.